and Chris, and this is my Writing Table podcast, where we talk to authors and other creatives about the writing world and what it takes to create the books that we love to read. Ready? Pull up a chair and let's begin. Maisie Eddings is a neurodiverse author, dentist, and most importantly, stage mom to her cats, Yaya and Zadie. She can most often be found reading romance novels under her weighted blanket and asking her boyfriend to bring her snacks. She's made it her personal mission in life to destigmatize mental health issues and write love stories for every brain. With roots in Ohio and Philadelphia, she now calls North Carolina home. Welcome, Maisie.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here again.
We were talking before I began recording about how much fun I have talking to you. I'm so excited to know you have another book coming out after this one that we're going to talk about. I'm hoping I get to talk to you a third time here in the next year.
Oh my God. Chris, I'll talk to you anytime. Awesome.
I'm in. The last time we talked, you were about to graduate from dental school and your debut was about to come out. So what was that like? Like all that happening at the same time?
It was a lot, believe it or not. Who would have thought? It was kind of a whirlwind in a lot of ways. And looking back on it, I'm like, I can't believe I like managed to balance all of that. But so A Brush with Love came out March 1st. And then I think I took boards like March 15th or something like that.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, I had like celebrated so hard for the release week that I feel like I was still hungover 2 weeks later. I'm
just kidding. But good.
Then I went through boards and then it was just like waiting to find out if I passed or not, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, those last few months of school were just like, I just felt like a walking bag of human goo. I was just like, I'm not even a person anymore. Because I was trying to get requirements done and everything. And so it was like a really big celebration. And then it was like just a ton of stress, like back, back, back. And then, you know, I finally graduated and then I was moving across the country 2 weeks after that. So it's just been, I feel like I still haven't caught my breath from it all, but I'm just so thankful for everybody that's read it. And it's been so cool.
I keep seeing A Brush with Love on people's pages. And now I'm seeing Lizzie Blake's Best Mistake. And I'm so excited. As we were talking before, I'm actually reading it this weekend. So I've only read the first page, which I have sent to some people, not knowing that who I sent it to, but we'll, it is what it is. Tell us about Lizzie Blake's Best Mistake.
Okay. So Lizzie Blake's Best Mistake is chaotic from the start. I'll just go ahead and lead with that. I was talking to somebody that read an arc. So it follows Lizzie and Rake. And she's like, they just make the most chaotic choices people could possibly make throughout the entire story. I'm like, yeah, that's about it. But Lizzie Blake has ADHD. She's living in Philly. She's kind of bouncing between jobs and not finding anything that's very satisfying or, you know, that she's able to hold down well because she is really struggling with, you know, executive functioning and stuff like that. And a huge way that she kind of copes, it's almost like self-care in a way for her, is to have hookups with people. Like It's just, she's very sex positive. It's her thing, but she's adamant that they need to be one night stands because she's not looking for emotional connection. She's been burned. She's kind of grown up being told that she's not enough or she's too much actually for people to handle. And then she meets Rake and he's a gorgeous Australian in the US for a business trip. And they end up having a two-night stand, which is, you know, her big mistake there. And then fast forward a couple of weeks and Lizzie finds out she's pregnant. And so, you know, she alerts Rake and the duo decide to co-parent. He's able to figure out a way to get back to the States. And so they end up living together in a studio apartment, no doors, one bathroom, one shower, one bed, but it's totally platonic and like no feelings at all for either of them.
Sure.
And so they, yeah, sure. That lasts for like 10 pages, I think. It's like very much the let's get it out of her system times like 100 in, throughout the book. But yeah, it's just kind of my love letter to people with ADHD and to being unabashedly and full-throated yourself and, you know, just really, really honoring who you are, learning to love yourself and be loved by others. So yeah.
Well, thank you. As someone with ADHD, and I'm going to tell you my little story because I've never told this on the podcast. I've talked a lot about having MS, and people with MS often have fatigue. And so they give you everything from antiviral drugs to ADHD meds. And I was always that person who we're talking about something in class in first grade, and I'm raising my hand going, I got my ears pierced, see? Like random things. Even as an adult, I did a lot of medical marketing stuff with these teams, and I don't know how any of them ever worked with me looking back, but at some point they put me on ADHD meds. It helped my fatigue, but then I started noticing I could sit at my desk all day long and work and complete a project and not go, boing, boing, boing. I mean, my sales team, when I worked for this hospice, would joke about squirrel, Chrissy squirrel. Now looking back, it was so obvious.
Yep.
So obvious. Love what you said just now. You said her being too much. You've got that kind of Kramer-esque unbridled enthusiasm and you don't know what to do with it and you can't help it.
Yep.
And you feel like it's too much.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that you brought that up because that's something that I like to think that it's your heart trying to share. You're enthusiastic and you're trying to share, but other people don't understand it that way. And so tell me where that comes from for you.
I think in a lot of ways, women in general are told by society that we need to shrink ourselves. And we see that in everything, right? Where we see that in careers where we have to be satisfied making less than men. We see that in beauty culture and diet culture, where it's this like concept that you need to be as small as possible and as pretty as possible because you can't take up space, but the space that you do take up, it needs to look nice by like these societal standards. So I think that women in general experience that a great deal. And then I think that neurodivergent people and, you know, particularly ADHD, where you're getting so much stimulus constantly from the world around you, it almost feels like an electric current going through you, right? And you're just like all over the place. It makes life very exciting, but it also makes it really difficult. And so it's this concept where, you know, on top of that, you're being told that your excitement is too much, your feelings are too much, your enthusiasm and joy is too much for other people to handle because you need to fit better into this mold. And I just don't believe in that. I think that if life feels exciting, then you should be excited, you know, and you should honor that and own that. And I think that's what makes the neurodivergent brain so beautiful and so wonderful, especially when we finally take off that mask and we're able to just be ourselves fully. I think it's a crime to tell somebody that they're too much or too anything because everybody's just the right amount of enough exactly where they are.
I've been asked this many times, and I suspect you have too. People will say, where did these ideas for your books come from? How do you come up with this stuff? You've heard that?
Oh, yeah.
Come up with this stuff. I don't know. It just happens. Your brain is firing in all these different directions and these stories and these people and these pictures and phrases. And, you know, it's like, we couldn't do this if our brain wasn't working this way. So, you know, you got to take the bad with the good.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think there's something too to be said about neurodivergent people a lot of times have trouble with social cues or like unspoken societal rules and everything like that. Mm-hmm. And so a huge part of the way that we like ingest the world around us is by observing how others act and trying to almost mimic that in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And I think that that makes for a lot of inspiration or makes it easy to really know a character that you're writing because you've spent so much time observing the world around you and how others are interacting with the world that the characters feel very real to you because that's just kind of how you've lived and seen the world. Yeah, I don't know. I just think a hyper brain makes for very fun storytelling.
Agree. 52 years old, I'm hearing this and I'm seeing ADHD in a whole new light because of Maisie Eddings. So thank you.
Oh, thank you. That's so sweet.
I wasn't on ADHD meds till I was like 40. And so I've spent most of my life not knowing. And then the rest of my life feeling like, oh, well, I'm kind of broken, you know?
Yeah.
So it's fun to get to look at it in a different light and go, oh, no, I'm not broken. I just am.
Yeah, exactly. You just are. You are enough. You are what you are. And that's all that really matters.
This is the positivity podcast today with Maisie Eddings.
I know. I love it.
Okay. Well, while we're talking about positivity, I have to ask, because this cracks me up every time I see it. Your Twitter handle is at FoxyGrandpa27. What in the world? Where did that come from?
This is the dumbest story. Like, okay. I don't know why it stuck with me. I grew up watching SpongeBob and it literally is so silly, but there was like an episode where SpongeBob had this hat where it had like soda cans on the side that he could drink from. And then Mr. Krabs, like, I don't even know why he wanted the hat. So he like bought a bunch of hats for SpongeBob to like try to trade him. And one of them was Foxy Grandpa on the hat. You know, as a little kid, I just thought that was the funniest thing in the world. And so I've retained that level of immaturity into adulthood too, because I was like, oh, got to come up with a Twitter handle. Oh, Foxy Grandpa. And then 27 is my lucky number. So
I always tag people when I do the promo and I was like, no, that can't be right.
Yeah.
Double check it. Double check it. Yep. Yep. That's Foxy Grandpa 27.
I know. I think about it all the time too. When my publisher like tags me and stuff, I'm like, they probably hate me so much.
Yeah, because they always, like, the publicist are always like, keep consistent branding. For me, it's Chris Klink Books. Everything needs to be Chris Klink Books. I love that you buck that, because I think Foxy Grandpa 27, it's like, that says who you are. That totally says who you are.
Yeah, it pretty much sums it up right there. And actually, I pay homage to that, because I didn't even think about it until I started doing podcasts for A Brush with Love. I totally forgot that was even my handle. I didn't even think about it. And then people started asking about it. And that's when I realized, oh, this is a pretty like bizarre thing, I guess. I pay homage to it in Lizzie's book. She has a favorite mug that says World's Sexiest Grandpa on it. So that's my handle.
Awesome. Don't ever change it. It says Maisie is not a company woman.
Yep. I can't be bought by corporations.
No, she is her own woman. So are these characters drawn from people you know?
You know, I really don't think so. I've thought about that a lot. I think that they're people I wish I knew, or maybe they're like little pieces of all my favorite people put together. They feel very real to me and they feel very individual and unique. And I don't think that they're necessarily, at least that, not that I've unlocked like through therapy, like, oh, I'm writing about this. I do think I'm inspired by a lot of my friends are some of the funniest people I've ever met. So I think a lot of like their humor inspires dialogue or situations or things like that. But they just kind of popped into my head very loud, very voicey, and very much themselves.
Okay, Rake, the male character, is Australian. Yeah. So when your audiobook narration was done, how did they manage Rake's voice?
Oh my God. Okay. So I write in third person, but I still do a dual point of view. And so we have a woman narrating Lizzie's part and then a guy narrating Rake's. He did a phenomenal job. I was just like, okay, we need to nail the Australian accent. There was like a lot of back and forth on whether all of Rake's chapters should be in an Australian accent or just the dialogue and stuff like that. And I ended up just trusting the producers make a call of how much Australian accent we need, as long as there's some in there. Uh-huh. And then when they sent me audition tapes and everything, I was screaming because they had them audition with a sex scene. And so I was like, oh my God, I can't even listen to this. Like, I was like, who wrote that? What nefarious like author wrote this? I don't even know. I think I just was like, you know, this sounds good. And so I was so embarrassed too. I don't know why you would think that you would be used to it when you wrote it, but here we are. It's one of my favorite parts of it, getting to hear the auditions and stuff like that, hear it come to life, because it almost feels like reading the book for the first time because you hear like their voices and everything. So it's just very, very cool and fun.
You know, I'm an audiobook fan, so I'm going to have to get the audiobook. Okay, so what is next for Maisie?
Oh my gosh, there's a lot going on. Let's see. The third and final book in this universe comes out April 4th. 2023. And that's Indira's book. And I just want to put it out there too. And Alex get their happy ending too. And yeah, so that one has the trope. It's like childhood nemesis to fake daters to lovers. Uh-oh. And the whole dynamic is kind of like roasting you as my love language. And that was probably the most challenging thing I've worked on. I ended up rewriting that one in about a month because it just like the way it originally was, it just wasn't working. I really labored over that one. So it's kind of a relief that it's gone into production and about to be out there and everything. But on the other hand, I'm like, oh my God, I hope nobody reads it. But I think
don't say that.
Yeah, I know. I feel like that's being a writer though. It's like you simultaneously simultaneously hope like everybody in the world reads your work and that no one reads it. Yeah. You just want them to buy it, but not read it. Like, it's too scary.
And don't even say anything. Just 5-star it. Yeah. You don't need to say what you liked about it. Just 5 stars, move on. Yeah. And we're all good.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm like, I can't. That's all. I just cannot. And then shortly after that, next August, my YA debut comes out.
Yay.
Yeah. It's called Tilly and Technicolor, and it's being published with Wednesday Books. And that one I'm so, so excited for too. I had such a blast writing it. So again, the heroine has ADHD and then the hero has autism. And so that one's just my love letter to neurodiverse love in general. They feel like my kids, like in so many ways. It was just such a pleasure to work on that book and kind of see these two total opposites learn to get along and then fall in love. And it has just a total road trip gone wrong through Europe theme around it. So yeah, lots of hijinks, lots of fun. That's what's coming down the pipeline.
I got to give kudos to your agent or whoever identified what you have to offer the world, because your writing got these contracts, but you have this pipeline where you're continuing to produce and give us more of our warm, fuzzy happies that we need right now. And we so need these things right now. You know, the world can be a depressing place. And
especially right now. And thank you. That means a lot to me. And I really can't speak highly enough. Kelly Martin was my original agent who I worked with, and she has since switched to being an editor, actually. So she's doing amazing things. And now I'm represented by Courtney Miller Callahan, but both of them have just been so supportive. And then on the editorial side, my editor, Eileen Rothschild, has been just a huge advocate for my books and everything internally. And I am like extremely, extremely lucky to have these people that I get to work with. I think about that every day. I'm like, I'm very, very lucky and fortunate to have found the right people.
We spend so much time dancing for all these different people trying to find the match. Mm-hmm. And so clearly you found your matches across the board.
Yeah, I'm very happy.
Have you had any time to read anything?
You know, I haven't had time to finish anything, but I am reading a ton of books right now. One that I am just blown away by is For the Wolf. It's a fantasy romance novel, and I've never read that much fantasy before, but I heard a lot about this book on Twitter in particular, and I am just like blown away by the world building. It is such a unique story. It's kind of a look at like patriarchal structures. It's a look at like, you know, stigma and things like that. I can't recommend it enough. It is so unique. I've also been kind of dabbling in some nonfiction. So I've been reading this book called By Julia Shaw. And it's a look at like bisexual identity and culture, the history of where the term bisexual comes from and how we've been represented in media and stuff. So that has been really cool. And I feel like it's written in a super accessible way. And then I'm currently reading Soulmates, S-E-O-U-L Mates by Susan Lee. And it's a YA romance coming out in September, actually. It is so fun. It has like all these K-drama elements to it. Uh-huh. And I would be shocked if this doesn't hit like all the bestseller lists. Like, it is so good. Cool. So yeah, that's where I've been. And then, you know, when I'm just like having a little meltdown and crying on the floor, I always pick up one of my historical romances and just like flip through the pages a little bit. You know, Tessa Dare never misses.
I love it. Just keep those on the floor, right?
Like, within reach. Yeah. My cat, her latest project was I like stack all my mass market paperbacks on my bookshelf, and her midnight project was to knock every single one of them down. And I haven't gotten around to picking them up in the past couple of weeks. So they're just like all over my floor.
Well, there, it's convenient, you know, when you're on the floor.
It really is. Yeah. They're right in reach when I have my little floor meltdowns.
Last question. Do you have any advice for new writers?
Oh gosh, I would say reading is probably the best thing you can do to strengthen your writing. I think that reading widely and anything that makes your brain spark and makes you excited and happy is such an amazing investment of your time as a writer, because even if it's not in your genre, even if it's not your style, there's still something about it that you can learn from, or, you know, look at craft. And even if it's in a passive way, like just reading for enjoyment and reading for pleasure is such an amazing way to learn about craft. And so that's definitely, I think, one of my biggest pieces of advice. And then on another front, I think learning to trust yourself with where a story needs to go is also very important, because especially if you're getting feedback from critique partners or early readers or, you know, developmental edits or things like that, it's very important to be able to take suggestions in. It's a humbling experience to take other people's suggestions or critiques, but there's also a level where you have to trust yourself to know what's right for them. And so finding that balance and just knowing you let go some control, but other parts you hold on to and know what's right.
Thank you, Maisie. This has been, as I knew it would be, a freaking blast.
Thank you. I love talking with you. I just think you're the best.
No, you're the best.
No, you're the best.
All right. Well, we'll just call it a tie.
We'll call it a tie. Sounds good.
To learn more, visit MaisieEddings.com.
If you're enjoying The Writing Table, please consider leaving us a review. There are so many podcasts out there. Reviews help other listeners find us. Thanks so much for your support.